Hey everyone, welcome to the Film in 5D podcast, episode 9. We are here on a very special day for Colton here.
Oh yeah, totally.
All joking aside, but yeah, a little bit of politics going on today. Actually, this whole week, Confederate flag goes down, gay flag goes up. So that's, you know, interesting. We don't talk too much about politics on this show, but I think we're going to address that and see how that affects film in one of these segments. So just real quick, we're going to do, obviously, the first rundown. We're going to talk about what came out this week. We're going to talk about some limited news and rumors on the Sony side and the Canon side. Not really much going on. We're going to talk a little bit more about the A7R II that was announced last episode. And then we're going to talk about Windows 10, because that's been announced for the end of July. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a tutorial on Adobe CC 2015, which came out last week. I've talked about this, I've talked about the new features, but after I got a little hands-on working for the last week and a half with it, it's substantially better than what I thought it was going to be. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And you're going to talk about the ruling that just came down from the Supreme Court and how that affects like content, I guess, and videos and like or movies and how it'll be more prevalent, I guess.
Yeah.
Gay marriage and stuff.
Yeah.
But now it won't be as much of a joke anymore because obviously it's going to be normal, I guess. So we'll see what you have to say about that. And then we are going to have our second battle. Our one last week kind of got ruined because of the sound issue. And I just beat you to death. So we're going to give you another shot. We're going to let you have the true and tested camera brand Canon, which you have your camera right here, versus my newfound love of cameras, well, I guess refound love of cameras, Sony. And we're going to battle it out, duke it out, and see what happens. Don't get too excited. Yeah. Quote of the week. The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long, and you have burned so very, very brightly.
It sounds so familiar.
Come on. Really? Sci-fi? 1982, I believe.
That doesn't help me that much.
I believe it came out around the same time as Alien. Same month, June of 1982, I think. It was a misinterpreted movie when it first came out and nobody liked it and it totally flopped, but now it's considered one of the best sci-fi films ever made, and they're about to reboot it and make a new one. It has Harrison Ford in it.
Star Wars?
Oh my goodness. Are you kidding me right now? Guys,
Star Wars fits that, right?
If you're listening to this, which I hope you are, since this is the first 5 minutes, please tell Colton what this movie is. And you can go back and check on the comments. I'm not going to tell you.
Are you serious?
It's going to kill you the rest of the episode. You don't deserve to know.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, that is the quote of the week. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time. And it's so true. Replicants?
Blade Runner?
Yes.
There you go.
As soon as I say replicants, with their 3-year lifespans, whatever it was, the candle that burns twice as bright burns twice as fast.
Yeah.
Or half as long, whatever. Okay, so what came out this week? What's the main kind of movie?
Ted.
Ted 2, sequel.
Dos.
So what are our... It's Friday right now. What are our predictions for Ted 2 in terms of box office? Obviously, right now it's getting 45% Rotten Tomatoes. I believe the first one got like was certified fresh. At least let me go ahead and look that up.
Sequels suck.
Sequels generally suck, but they make a lot of money.
I don't know. Did Ted, original Ted, make a lot of money?
I believe so, yeah. For a comedy. So Ted 1, I mean, it wasn't that much better. 67% wasn't even certified fresh. So 45% isn't that much worse. I think a lot of people are still willing to go see this. I didn't see the first one in theaters, so I don't feel like seeing this one in theaters. I don't really go to the theater to see a comedy, to be 100% honest with you. But, you know, we'll see.
I thought the spiral joke was pretty funny.
The what?
The perfect spiral in the commercial.
Yeah. It was still a perfect spiral. Yeah, Tom Brady's in it. And obviously because Mark Wahlberg and stuff. So I would say that there's a good chance that Jurassic World, which has been out for 2 weeks now, have you seen it? Mm-mm. Oh my, come on.
I've seen the pictures of, whatchamacallit, standing there with the raptors.
Yeah, that's in the trailer. Okay, well, Jurassic, I got Jurassic World on here, makes bank. We were gonna talk about how much money it made, how it blew up all the records. I think for a third week in a row, it's going to be number one. So Ted 2 is going to lose. We'll revisit this next time. I'll take a note. Let me go ahead and I'll just take a screen cap of this right now so that I remember. We'll see who wins.
Oh, that was fancy.
Yeah, Apple. Wow. There you go. So Jurassic World makes bank. It made $200 million domestic opening weekend, which blew away the Avengers from, I believe, 2011. Is that when it came out? Yeah, 2011 or 12. So it blew it out of the water. I mean, I think that made like 180, I want to say. So this one got over 200. It's the first time a movie opening weekend ever got over 200 million. And then the second weekend, it got 100 million. And these are just the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So just think about that. It made, just on the weekends, $300 million. $100 million is... Most movies don't even, like, there's only maybe one or two movies a year that make over that in a certain weekend, and it did it on its lower end weekend. So it made 200, then 100. It's made 400 total in the first 2 weeks, domestic. So that's just the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, that number is probably closer to a billion, you know, overseas.
See, that's kind of weird to me, because maybe I'm living under a rock, but I felt like I didn't think there'd be that much hype for that movie, like.
Well, so I've seen the movie. It's good for a blockbuster. It has the caveat, it's good for a blockbuster. Uh-huh. So blockbuster, I think Transformers, you know, very like cookie cutter, atypical, try to fit all four quadrants. Do you know what the four quadrants are? Have we talked about this yet? Yeah, you can guess.
Tricks, explosions.
Essentially, it's, you know, males and females of a certain age and boys and girls of a certain age. So you're like 18 to 55 male and female, and then like that's the 4-year quadrants. This movie perfectly hits all of those. And it's like I don't want to spoil anything, but there's parts where characters actually get eaten by the dinosaur that you don't see it coming. Like you're like, did they just show that? Isn't this like kids in the audience? There's like a little 4-year-old over there, and like he's laughing and stuff, and they still make it fun. They don't show like, you know, blood everywhere, but it's really violent, you know, and it kind of keeps the realism for the guys who don't want to see, you know, like some fake, you know, whatever. Which like Lost World obviously was super bloody, and Jurassic Park was pretty violent. I mean, a lot of people died. So it's good that they kept up that end of it while still appealing to the kids. So I thought it did. As it did what it was supposed to do. Clearly, it made $200 million on opening weekend.
Yeah,
Chris Pratt is a happy man. Let's just say it that.
Yeah, and they used him to hit that female demographic, right?
Yep. Sex sells. Okay. Anything else on that? Anything else coming out this week that you're interested in? Or there's really, it's kind of a weak week. Like I honestly think that, sadly, Jurassic Park's going to win a third week in a row.
Yeah, I gotta ask you though, what do you think of the dinosaurs in the movie? Like, were they good?
I think they were probably the best part of the movie. Now, there's a lot of CGI. They did a little bit of animatronics for like that kind of like harken back to the original scene with the Triceratops in Jurassic Park, where they use animatronics for like the close-ups. But that was only one scene where they did that. I thought they could have done more of that. It's a little too much CGI at times. It was cool seeing Jurassic World though, like the actual park open and people going there, and the whole premise was that, you know, it's been open for 20 years and people are kind of, it's kind of like the zoo. People are kind of tired of the old, you know, so they start making new dinosaurs and hybrid dinosaurs. And so that's where the plot is too convenient at times. And it's, you know, has a lot of issues, but I don't regret paying to see it. So I guess there's that. And for me, as someone who I think I'm very critical of movies, especially blockbusters, I think that's good. Inside Out came out last week. Did you hear about this one? Got 98% Rotten Tomatoes. They're saying it's since 2000, it's like probably one of the best Pixar movies made. Top three.
Yeah, I actually really want to see this movie.
Mm-hmm. It's got Phyllis from The Office in it. It's got Amy Poehler from basically a hybrid of The Office, which is Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't think it was going to do that good.
It got 90 million of opening weekend. So it didn't even break 100, and Jurassic World beat it still. That's crazy that it even beat a kid movie like that. Like, kid movies, that's 90 million is a lot for a kid movie like that, you know? And those type of movies aren't really for kids. They're also blockbusters where they hit all four quadrants. Like, you can take your family and everybody will enjoy something about it. Mm-hmm. But Jurassic World still beat it, which is insane. All right, moving on. I have nothing new to report written on my sheet here, which is, did you find anything? Anything catch your eye? Your Canon fanboy, canonrumors.com? I will tell you, there was nothing, unless you know something.
No, I saw, like, some random camera for I forgot who, but it didn't really catch my eye.
I was going to quickly address, because I saw this image, I thought it was hilarious. So I was out with one of my coworkers today, and he brought his Canon to work. Yeah. And, like, it was a 60D. It was probably exactly the same size as my 5D. I literally forgot how big and bulky and heavy they were. Like, when I was like, what camera is that? And I, like, held it, I was like, oh, this is the exact same size as my old camera. I mean, maybe even a little lighter. Like, like, you could see an image like this, and it puts them side by side, and you're like, really? Like, this is, like...
Why would it be that small?
Come on, now. I mean, man... And like a lot of people are talking about how, you know, mirrorless is the benefits of mirrorless are starting to really outweigh the benefits of mirrored, specifically because the benefits of mirrored aren't even that much better anymore like they were before. Like before, you couldn't really do sports photography, you couldn't do all this stuff, and you know, the EVF people didn't like that. And but now it's like they're getting so quick and processors are so good that it's basically all the extra features that you get from this, which we've been talking about, the mirrorless, is starting to heavily outweigh, you know, anything else. So I saw that image. That's really, anything else you want to say about that?
I just want to note how good that Canon camera looks next to that.
This looks like an old school, like, nice camera, and oh man, I like it. It doesn't say A7R Mark II on the front, like, it actually says it on the back. I don't know if you've seen the picture, like, it's like right here. Like, see how this one says 3? It's like right there. I thought that was a cool design. Okay, so the main thing we were going to talk about this week was Windows 10. You don't have Windows 8, correct?
I actually rock Windows 7.
Ooh. Why?
Windows 8 was dumb, dude. Everyone hated it.
Okay, so let me give you a little... We're going to talk about Windows 10 and some of the key features that we're looking forward to. Are you going to get Windows 10?
I think so, yeah.
It's a free upgrade for me, so that's why I was asking if you had Windows 8, because I believe if you have Windows 8, it's a free upgrade, which is kind of... That's kind of what Mac's been doing. Before, when I got my Mac, it was like $20 to upgrade, which was still better, even on a yearly basis, than paying, you know, outright $120 or whatever Microsoft was charging for the last couple releases. So now they're starting to go with the free route too, which I think is cool. It makes sense. I mean, they still got to get a profit somewhere from that, I imagine, selling like Microsoft Office, stuff like that, apps within it and stuff. But they're trying to make it, like, honestly, I have some images to pull up where, like, it literally looks like they're trying to copy Mac. Like, it's so funny. And I don't mind it because the features on my Mac. Yes, yes. No. Like this one. So let me just show you this. Sorry. What does that remind you of? Literally the same exact view where it pulls up. Instead of on top, it's on bottom. And then you can see like a little mini preview, just like you can on Mac, like that. Mm. I just thought that was, yeah. But there's a lot of things I've been looking through here. So a little timeline. I got Windows 8 pretty much right when it came out. It was horrible. To sum it up, it obviously a lot of my peripherals didn't work, especially my USB 2.0 peripherals.
Yeah.
This was the same issue I remember I had with Vista right when that came out. That was like the issue most people had. Surprised they didn't, you know, learn from that mistake. And it seems like they are this time they've released like a beta, like a working beta, and everybody's tried everything, and so like all the manufacturers know if like if their stuff's gonna work and be ready for it. So that's good. But so I basically installed it, And I was like, man, there's no start menu. It's hard to do stuff. And it's running faster. Like, it's supporting, you know, my 32 gigabytes of RAM I have, which is good because Windows 7 doesn't do that unless you had Pro, which I didn't at the time. So I actually went and bought Pro. I went back to Windows 7. I bought Pro, which was like $200, just so I could use my 32 gigabytes of RAM. I started using it, and it was like I guess I had forgotten how slow dual screen was, like, especially if you're doing, like, you're editing or you're playing a video game. Once you have more than two screens, like, I have three screens, so once you're using three at once, it starts to really lag on Windows 7. And then 8.1 came out. I went back to that because I heard that they fixed a lot of things, and all of a sudden it was all smooth. Like, my multi... So basically, the coolest thing why I use Windows 8 is the multi-screen. There's, you know, the desktop menu on the bottom, on all three screens. You don't get that on Windows 7. You only get the one in the middle. So I can basically be on any screen and, like, hit go down to my tabs and open the internet tab or whatever. So it's for multi-screen. If you have three screens or two screens, it's a much better experience than Windows 7 for sure. But it wasn't until 8.1 came out, which was a free update, but it took them like a year to release that. That's when I went back, and then unfortunately, I had already wasted, you know, $200 on Windows 7, but oh well. So this one is obviously going to be a kind of hybrid of that. What features, what's your main feature that you're looking forward to?
Well, obviously the start menu.
Yeah, so they're bringing back the start menu because a lot of people, they're trying to make it like a tablet, you know, interface, and they thought it'd be cool to have like this thing that opens up and it opens all your newest things, but some people just don't like change. Like, give me my start menu where I can go in and I know exactly where, you know, control panel is, and I know where everything is, and I don't have to search for anything. I personally like searching for stuff because I've gotten so used to I know what I want. Like, I know the name of what I'm looking for, so I just search for stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's just a quicker thing. I've gotten used to that on Mac as well. So for me, that's where it wasn't an issue that there wasn't a start menu. I'm glad that they're bringing it back because, you know, at least it'll be easier to shut down now.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, when I was using my friend's computer that had Windows 8 for a couple minutes, I was like a complete noob. Like, I didn't know what I was doing.
It was a change. They're trying to blend it too. Now, another one, I don't know if you saw this. One of the things I'm excited for is notifications. And let me see if I can zoom in here. Okay, it's all shitty quality. Enhance. But basically, so Mac, let me actually pull over here. Mac has these things right here where you can actually have it so it automatically does it when you go up here. But mine's actually, you have to click it. And it comes up with all the notifications that I have.
Huh.
Anyway, you can customize it. So that's kind of the big new thing. I think that came out two operating systems ago. And now Windows is finally catching up. Because apparently they're only allowed to release an update every 5 years. So, like, Mac's doing it every year. So they released this, like, 2 years ago. So now that's cool that Windows is going to do it. I'm sure you'll be able to put, like, things in there, like, most commonly used games and programs and whatever. Anything else that you're seeing from here?
I read that there's going to be support for Cortana.
Is that a Halo thing?
Yeah.
Oh, it's my God. Come on, Microsoft. Tooting their own horn, man. Come on. So it's like Siri. It's a ripoff of Siri is what you're telling me.
Yeah, but better. Maybe. I don't know.
Siri for a computer. I don't know. I like Siri for, you know, my phone, it's like a personal assistant, Palm Pilot, but for the computer?
Yeah, I'll have to see what it's
like. Hello, Aaron. Good morning. Do you know what you need to work on today? Have you visited your latest site? Your most commonly visited site. Which is, of course, Sony Rumors, AlphaRumors.com.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There's a list of stuff. I think, honestly, a lot of the features that they're adding and that are worth mentioning are things I already have on Mac. So I'm just happy that my Windows is going to have a similar experience now.
Yeah, but for me, I'm not too.
It's free. Well, for me, it is.
Yeah, I'm not too interested in like the features and stuff. I mean, they'll be nice. I'm more interested in the performance and the compatibility.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, their Windows 7 cannot hold up a candle to Windows 8 in terms of performance. Like, I'm telling you, in my experience of using, like, heavy-duty programs, heavy-duty games, whatever, with a good system that Windows 7 was just lacking and made my system slow. Whereas Windows 8 really improved it. Unfortunately, it just wasn't compatible early on with a lot of my stuff. So, okay. Moving on. Talk about Adobe CC 2015. Did you download this yet? Have you downloaded the new update for Photoshop and everything? I haven't checked out the new... I don't even know what's new in Photoshop.
Yeah, unless it automatically updated on my computer, I haven't really opened it recently. Okay. Yeah.
So I believe I've talked... I'm going to actually do a full episode on what's new with Premiere. Mm-hmm. Just my kind of own workflow, how it's helping out and stuff. I just wanted to show you guys four quick things. I'm going to start off with a very easy one because this is the very first episode, actually. Oh my gosh, that's on my old camera. So let me just watch this real quick. Let me see if I can make a good point here. So this is what's called a morph cut. Now this only works, obviously, if you're on a tripod and you're not moving around too much. So basically, if you ever watch YouTube videos and you see people sitting in front of their cameras, there's a lot of jump cuts. It's become kind of like socially acceptable to have a jump cut. I personally hate it. When I see that, it makes me mad. I either want to see you punch in to cover up the cut or blend it somehow. So now this is where the blending it somehow comes into play. So let's play this here. Of course, it's not going to have any sound. Can I get some sound up in here?
No.
Okay, so, well, gosh, I don't have any sound, but make sure. No, I don't want to mess with that. I'm going to go ahead and cut right here, assuming that that's where the cut. I was hoping I'd have sound for this. And I'm going to go right back to where I was. And I'm going to add a morph cut. And this actually has to render because it does some crazy behind the scenes stuff. So I'm going to wait for that to go. So basically what this is doing is it's going to try to match up where my head was, where my hand was, and it's going to try to like basically fill in the frames of the cut. So instead of just jumping in from one frame to the next, it's going to blend it over 16 frames. That's what I have it set up to do anyways, and we're going to see if it works.
What?
Mm-hmm. This won't work for every situation, but if you were talking, I was talking to you, and all of a sudden I made a mistake, and I'm like, shit, I just made a mistake. Don't move. And go again. It would do a very, very good job. Nobody would notice that there was any cut at all. But if you're moving around, you're waving your hands around, then you're going to have a little bit more of an issue, and you might as well use a punch in, which obviously we do with this camera. So whenever we're punching in, we'll probably be making mistakes, just in case.
No.
All right, let's watch this. Oh my gosh, look at me, dude. That is ridiculous. Oh, computer being slow. Did we see it?
Dang, that's good.
No, I don't think we saw it. I feel like it's lagging. It's lagging like right when you get to it.
Steve Jobs.
Yeah, it's definitely lagging and it's not working how as intended.
Man, this update is looking pretty nice.
No, okay, let me step through it one step. So basically the issue right now is I'm working with footage that's actually conformed and it's missing frames because it's my old camera from back in the day. So let's go frame by frame and let's see if we could see the cut.
Was that it?
See how it's duplicating frames though, and that's kind of why it's jittering like that? So that was the cut right there. Uh-huh. You couldn't see it. I'd say it did a pretty good job. I mean, let's look at my hand. I'm going to go into detail on this on my episode next week, but just watch the hand. So did you just see it? It's happening right there.
Yeah.
But you can't see it real time. Now, I need footage that's actually the correct frame rate to do it, but I think this one was successful. I mean, we're looking frame by frame, and we can barely... Like, the morph happens right there. See? Right there? That's the morph. But you don't even see it real time. There it is again. And done. So you don't even see that real time. You just see a little bit of a pause because of the frame rate.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So that's cool. But there's actually better features that are even more useful for media editors, film editors like myself.
So is this like special stuff that was included with the update? Or
Yeah. It's all free, obviously, if you have Adobe CC, which I'm pretty sure everybody does now.
So then before you didn't have a morph cut then?
No. This is brand new technology. I'm sure it'll get better as the new generations come along. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is a cool little feature. So do you know about these workspaces? Do you use these where you can go in here and you can say, oh, if I'm working on...
What?
Did you know about those?
No.
Okay, so most people who are professionals know about these, right? And like I tend to use CS5.5 because that's kind of my bread and butter, what I've been using for a long time. But if you're working on just audio or color or whatever, you can go through and choose these. Well, now they have it even easier where you can just have it right here. Let me just... you can kind of have as many as you want up here. Like, let's say I wanted to start working on color. I just click that, and it's going to open this whole interface for me. And it's going to have all the scopes and everything. And I can adjust this full on. And a lot of this is the same. Like, you could always go in here, and you could turn off. Let's say I don't really need the HLS. Let me turn that off. You could always do that. But basically, it's just an easier way to get to it now up here rather than going here. And that way, I'm more likely... Because usually, I didn't, like I said, I only use the CS5.5 one. But now, like when I actually go, I'm going to edit audio, I'll actually click this because it's right there. Might as well do it. And then, you know, you can customize these, obviously. But that's just a little neat feature for my workflow that's helped tremendously. So the big one, and we've talked about this, is Lumetri Color. As you can see, as I pulled this up, it pulled it up right here. Already ready to go. Didn't have to add an effect or anything. As soon as I hit color, it's on here. So I have to actually select a clip. And I was going to mention this. So before, if you wanted to add effects to a clip, you either had to add them directly to the clip and then like copy that over multiple clips if you have all these cuts and different like, you know, shots and whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you can use an adjustment layer, and they added those to Premiere about 2 years ago, I think, where just like After Effects, you could add all the effects to the adjustment layer and everything below that would have the effect. But for me, I don't need to know that. The thing to me that I found out for this update, and I think this is brand new, I'm not entirely sure, I just noticed it, so I believe it's brand new, is that you can actually select whether you want to color correct just this clip or you want to color correct the entire assortment of that clip, so all the cuts. It's like for me at my work, I get a shot, we record for 20 minutes and then I have to cut that up. So instead of like now highlighting, copying that, my effects to all those ones, I can work on them at the same time by just clicking master, and it's going to pull up and work on just that clip. So that's just the master and the sequence kind of thing. But to make this interesting for those listening, I want to talk about Lumetri Color. So this is essentially, I was learning SpeedGrade, which is another program. I was learning it, and I was trying to learn it. And then I found out this was coming out. I'm like, I'm not going to learn this now. Like, this is going to have, this basically has all the good core features you get from SpeedGrade without being a separate program. So why spend the time, unless I'm making a feature film, like why spend the time in that program and bring everything over piece by piece when I could just do it right in here? So I don't know if you'll notice this. We've talked about... So there's basically five layers. And the way Adobe is, they want you to work from top to bottom. So they want you to start with the basic and then go to the creative and curves and all that, and then finish off with, you know, vignettes and whatever.
Yeah.
So what does this remind you of, this little setup right here? We've showed it on the show before. Look a little bit like a camera raw to you? Remember that you get to camera raw from Bridge? It's right before you get the step between Photoshop and camera raw. You remember that?
Yeah.
So yeah, this totally has, do. honestly, I personally can correct a shot. For the most part, I can correct a shot with just these settings, these basic settings. So like if my white balance was incorrect and I need to warm it up, I can go warm it up. And obviously, like, this is all real time right now. So, like, if I'm cooling it down, obviously, the blues are going to go up. If I'm warming it up, the reds are going to go up. So, like, I'm seeing all this real time, and I can have whatever I want over here. And I'm pointing over here at the scopes. Exposure. I mean, like, so this is your histogram. So, obviously, anything above this is getting clipped. Anything below this is getting crushed. So, you can see how, you know, that's changing. And then if I let go, obviously... the blacks are super high now and the whites are clipped. If I bring it back down. So that I'm seeing that all live, which is cool. And it's all in one thing. So you don't need to use Red Giant anymore. You don't need to use Speed Grade. This is all in this one thing. And I can go through, obviously, there's if you want to add contrast here, which I usually don't. I don't add contrast with this one. If you want to recover highlights, just say highlights were blown out. You could bring the highlights down and, you know, bring it down a little bit. If you want to recover some of the shadows and bring those back up. As the basic things that I use for photo editing right here. And then on top of that, you can even add a little bit of saturation. I personally don't add saturation here, and I'll show you why later. So another cool thing is I can turn just these, what I did on this one, on and off by just selecting this. So as I go through the rest of them, I can kind of finesse it and see which each layer is doing. Now, if I just want to see what all layers are, I just hit the zero. This is the same shortcut that SpeedGrade uses, and that just turns it on and off so I can see what I've done. Okay, creative. So this one, I wish that we were using S-Log footage because they have some nice Sony ones in here. Of course, I don't see them. These are basically like the looks, like the ones we used to use on short films and whatever. So if you want to just get a quick look in and see, and you can like lower the intensity. We talked about blending modes last time. And just a lot of cool features, and you can add film look. This is actually where I add my sharpening, so I'm going to go ahead and turn this off. And like this is usually where I'll come in and add a little bit of sharpening, and I'll look at it 100% if possible. Sorry, this is incredibly boring for people listening. And then I'll add my saturation here. So this is the one where I'll add my saturation. Curves, this is what I really like. So these were all separate things. You had to go to After Effects, you had to go to SpeedGrade, you had to make a LUT in Photoshop. Now, Premiere has curves, and it's all within this one color processing thing. And so if I want to add contrast, I can do that here. And I can do like an S-curve or whatever and bring up the highlights and bring down the shadows and get a little more contrast, whatever I want. And then obviously I can go through and I can say, you know what? I'm a little white, I'm a little pale. Let me bring the midtones and the reds up a little bit. And you can see, you know, not saying that that looks good particularly right now, but just to have that within here. And then on top of that, I've never used one of these. It's called a hue saturation curve. I was a little intimidated when I first saw it, but essentially what it does is, so let's say, you know, that blue shirt's kind of interesting. Let's see if we can play with that a little bit. So I'm going to add the blue, and let's add both teals or cyans and blues. And let's start bringing these down. Let's just make these straight up black and white and see how it affects my shirt. Boom. So I could basically pick out a certain color and very finesse, you know, kind of come through and add points and kind of bring it down. Like, maybe I don't want to, basically before you had little sliders like, oh, bring down the oranges and bring up the greens to compensate. It's a little confusing. When you see it visually like this, you're thinking, you know, I don't need to bring down the greens and then compensate by bringing up, you know, the things. It just all kind of blends naturally. Why are you laughing?
Oh, because you said greens and things.
It's just funny. I'm going to turn this one off for now. Like I said, obviously we could hit all of them to see what I started with. Now, obviously I've just been going through real quick. I'm not trying to make anything nice. Now here's the big thing. Here's the big ticket. Fourth in line, color wheels. So these are essentially basically the level of color wheels you get with a program like Colorista 2, which I believe is a $200 plugin. And all you essentially get for $200 is exactly what this is, where you basically can say, oh, here's my shadows. Let me bring those up. Or, you know what, the highlights are too high, let me bring those down. And I can go through and do that for each, for obviously highlights, midtones, and shadows. And then you can color correct each one. So like my midtones, let's say I want to make myself more green for whatever reason, you know, and you can finesse this using the other ones as well. This is going to be your final correction. This is the tool that you're going to use to match up your shots in terms of color. Mm-hmm. So obviously Matrix would be green, you know, whatever. And then the last one is vignette. Right now they have just vignette. Obviously you can add vignette, which is going to turn it white because you're obviously, that would be like for correcting a lens that maybe has a little bit of vignetting on the corners, like a wide angle lens. And then if you want to just add a stylistic thing, you can turn it black and maybe feather it off a little bit more. Let's just see what that did. So vignette, like you literally to make a vignette, it was. So I talked a lot about Magic Bullet looks. I had a version maybe about 4 years ago. I got tired of upgrading it. You know, I don't need to buy that thing over and over again. It stopped working for newer versions of Premiere, so I kind of got used to using the cheap, you know, After Effects and Premiere plugins. But now all of this is just one effect. You're not layering all these things. And like I said, because if you look down here, maybe pull down this, so you can see this little red underline right here. That means that it's basically this effect is being applied to the entire effect. So if I click on here, and I go, let me go back into my editing mode, and I go into my effects, you're not going to see anything in here. This is normally where I copy and paste everything. Now you click over to the master, and it's in there. And it makes more sense when you see a huge project with a million cuts, and you know, you got, let's say, you were shooting on location, and one scene you shot an hour with the footage for, you know, five different shots. You can now easily match all five of those shots by just applying it all to one layer. So that's cool. So I was really happy with that. I couldn't believe like how well they did with that. I'm glad that I don't have to learn an entire new program, because I'm not a colorist at all. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that they've made it simple for me, and it's definitely making my workflow faster. I'm going to go into depth about that, maybe a little bit more specific about why you'd want to use this in order and what specifically you can use for each one. But yeah, there's a couple more features hidden here that I'll be talking about on that episode. Moving on, we're going to talk about Supreme Court ruling gay marriage, 50 states, go. And how that affects media.
Yeah, so right now, I think one might argue that there isn't a lot of representation of same-sex couples and or not, you know, that kind of thing in like movies and media and stuff like that. I mean, there's some exceptions. Usually it's pretty tragic, but there's nothing like, I don't know if you'd see like a rom-com or something like that getting released, you know, in theaters.
Didn't that movie with Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal like do really well, like back in like 2005-7 or something? What? Brokeback Mountain? That was like one of the main, like,
was that a rom-com? I don't think, was that?
No.
Yeah,
exactly. It was a drama.
Yeah, see, a drama.
I feel like usually rom-coms have a lot of gay people in them.
Like, as the main...
What's that show on freaking Fox with the guy from Married with Children? I don't watch it, but I know that there's a gay couple, and they're, like, you know, one of the main... Okay,
but not even just being in the background or whatever. Like, I'm saying, like, the couple of the movie.
I can't think of any.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I'm getting at. Like, yeah, there's already some representation, but like you're saying, like Brokeback Mountain and stuff like that, usually it's very like, I don't know, tragic. There's something going, like it doesn't have a good ending type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of wondering, you know, with this ruling now, like if it eventually it'll become more normal. I mean, it's kind of interesting because if you look at statistics, it's kind of hard to say because, you know, survey polls, that kind of stuff, people getting answers, but there isn't a large percentage of the total human population that would identify themselves as non-straight, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But still, you know, there is some kind of demand for it. Like, will it ever be made, do you think? Or is it not worth it?
Well, that's the thing. We talk about this a lot, and it's all about hitting kind of those four quadrants and, like, appealing to everybody. And yeah, there's a certain small, very tiny percentage of the population that is gay and that will maybe appreciate if people make more movies centered around them. But there's a lot of people that's going to alienate as well. The main question is it going to be hip? Are the hipsters going to go see it to support equality and whatever? Am I going to go? Are you going to go? You know, like, is our generation going to go support movies like that? And the answer remains to be seen. So, I mean, if you're asking me, you know, do I think so? It remains to be seen. It could happen. I could see it happening, but it all comes down to Will it make money? Will it provide new and fresh, interesting content and take? Because there's a lot of saturation right now. You know, there's a lot of stuff being done over and over again. I mean, there's literally the same identical movies coming out back to back, you know, about sleeping with your best friend's girlfriend. Like, you know, it's all the same stuff. And it's been like that way for 30 years now when it comes to romantic comedies. They're kind of all like generic and the same. So will this change that? I think it could. Will it gain steam? It remains to be seen.
Yeah, because it's like, when you think about it, like, say, like, a children's cartoon, like, would there be at some point in the future, like, more representation in something like that, you know? Like, something like Sesame Street? Like, it's kind of weird, because it's like, you know, I guess technically, like, marriage and stuff is legal, but, I mean, it's not like it's ever really been, like, it's just been, like, a taboo. Like, is it still going to be kind of taboo? Like, it's...
Well, there's a big fight going on in Hollywood right now for... sex equality for just female and male.
Yeah.
We've talked about this. We talked about female action stars. Mm-hmm. And obviously my favorite actor period is Emily Blunt, and she's a female actress. I think most of my favorites are, you know, females. I think, you know, we don't need to get into that, but, I don't know. I forget what point I was about to make. Oh, there's just their struggle for equality right now. And the main question, we've talked about it. The question is, will people pay to go see female action stars? And I talked strongly about it. It has to be believable, and it has to be feel real. It can't feel like there's going to be movies coming out because of today's decision. There's going to be movies coming out in the next 6 months, like straight to DVD, you know, cheap movies. That are trying to take advantage of this, of that, and yeah. It's going to feel forced and it's going to feel wrong, and that's only going to step us back, if that makes sense.
So, yeah. I was wondering if there was going to be like a cash grab in regards to this.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. And so it's not until like the main stars kind of do it. I think what we really need, we have Tyrion Lannister. What's his name? Who's in the Pixels movie? Dinklage, Peter Dinklage. Yeah. He's like kind of, you know, taken, he's the main, you know, dwarf, midget actor. Mm. Like, are we going to get a main gay actor who can hold roles like that down? Is someone going to come out as being gay now? Like, can you imagine if someone's been in this closet the whole time and they just found out that this is like going to become hip and that they might get some roles now because they're gay? Like, we'll see a few people coming out maybe. Maybe Zach Galifianakis is gay. Can you imagine if he was gay and also he started doing movies with his purse and stuff? Like, not to make fun or anything, but I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, politics aside. Okay, so we have a huge Canon versus Sony battle. We're about to throw down Sony.
Canon, baby, look at this.
Look at this strap I don't use. Yeah.
I don't look at this one. It's so fancy.
Oh, that, you know, that strap is definitely, I'll give you, they invest their money in straps. Not R&D, not customer support, not forum feedback generation. No. But straps, yes. Invested. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, would you like to start off? And to be fair, I think... Actually, I don't even know if I have to do this disclaimer. I think I'm really 100% against Canon, so this will be an easy fight for me to fight. Are you impartial in any way? Are you going to be faking it, essentially? Like I said last week, I like PC and Mac equally.
Well, I mean, personally, I'm not really much of like a camera gearhead, so I don't really...
But you own a Canon.
Yeah, just because I... Well, because
I just want to make sure, I'm trying to make sure this fight's going to be real. Like, if you love Canon, I love Sony, and then we just...
No.
Spend the next 15 minutes duking it out?
No, I don't love Canon. I was an outsider, and I was entranced by
the... What people told you, that Canon's the best,
Canon. Yeah, by the look of Canon, by the how would you say it? Like, the precedence of Canon. Like, you know, you see somebody with a Canon camera, you're like, wow... That, you know, that's like a photography camera, you know, or like Nikon. I mean, Sony, yeah, I guess it has some of that too, but Canon is just so recognizable, you know. You see some, like you were saying with the strap. You see the strap, you know it's a Canon camera. Like, it's just, like, it's recognizable.
It's funny, because when I see that strap around, I just get disgusted. I just see people, I'm like, they really bought into that hype. Like, that's, like, the new hip Mac. Actually, not even anymore. It was for a time. I would say not anymore. What's funny? So, my argument, my main argument is mirrorless. Obviously, I think I have a pipe bomb for later that I will drop. But essentially, they're just innovating more. They're, for video, there's no question. There's not very many people that shoot video professionally who are still using Canon and able to defend it. So I'm not going to really be able to hammer you too much on that, because honestly, you can't win. I mean, the Canon is not a video platform anymore. It's still very good for sports photography, professionals shooting the NBA and shooting everything, football. They're all still using Canons. And even if they're not using Canons, they're using Canon glass, because Canon does make the best glass in the world, other than some specific glass companies like Leica or Zeiss. But they make more primes for videos and, you know, for street photography and stuff like that, versus just, you know, the go-to sports photography. Canon's going to win every time, or Nikon. But, so Dave Dugdale, who's a friend of the show, I would say.
Yes.
Subscribed since like day one or something. He made an interesting point, I'd say about a year ago. He was at... was at CES, not CES, NAB. He was at NAB, National Broadcasters, whatever. And he was at the Canon booth. And this is right around when the GH4 was coming out. Sony had just announced that they were coming out with this A7S, which is a super sensitive light. And he asked him, he's like, so are you guys going to make a camera like this? Because, like, you guys keep making the same things, and you're only updating your cameras every 4 years, and you're not coming out with this, you know, follow focus help and all these settings built in. And then the Canon guy literally looked at him and said, oh no, if there was an interest in the market for that, we'd be doing that. But we're not getting any interest from consumers. Which is a blatant lie. So basically, a little backstory on this. What happened was the Canon 5D, huge hit. It was 2008. They didn't even know what they had. They're like, oh, we need to make a Mark II of something. Add video to it. Nobody's going to use it. Maybe the photojournalist. And all of a sudden, like some of these, like Vincent LaFerre, some of these independent cinematographers and stuff got their hands on it. I said, should say professional. And they were like, holy crap, if you put like nice lenses on this, this is like, it changed the world. Those were the first DSLRs to shoot professional level quality. And they're like, oh, Canon's like, oh, but they still didn't fully embrace it. They were kind of like, you know, people are using it, and we'll come out. We're going to come out with a $12,000 4K DSLR form factor 1DX. That's going to be our answer for the professional video people. And everybody is like, whoa, the Canon 5D was only $3,000. Now you're asking us to pay $12,000 for, like, yeah, it was one of the first 4K cameras to come out. But $12,000 for a DSLR, I mean, you might as well get like a Red Scarlet for that price, which is the same price, or a Canon C300. So yeah, they started coming out with more. So they basically kicked themselves in the balls. They dropped the ball for sure. They basically screwed them. So basically, any features that they were to add in these lower end like Mark III, Mark IV cameras, they're basically cutting off their balls for their 1DX, Canon C300, Canon C100, Canon C300. They have all these very expensive video cameras that they're basically, like, those have the features that cameras like the A7S have and the GH4 have, and like, and they're five times the price. So that's where they messed up. They said, okay, yeah, we see an interest in this, but only in the professional level willing to pay $20,000. That wasn't the case, because the original interest came because they were so cheap, and you can spend most of your money on glass instead of spending money on the camera. So they messed up, and they have to wait until the 1DX dies before they correct this mistake. Because any features they add to their lower-end cameras, nobody's going to buy the 1DX. And people do buy it. It's just not the main percent of independent filmmakers who are spending less than $5,000 on a camera. Go. Okay. So my point was, they don't listen to their... They're clearly not listening. And if they... Or if they are listening, they realize they already screwed up by releasing cameras that were way too expensive for the people that were interested, and now are jumping ship to Panasonic and Sony.
Yeah, that is true. It does suck, but like you were saying earlier, they do have. When you have a Canon camera, you have access to a lot of different lenses, a lot of different accessories, a lot of different options. So, yeah, the body might cost a lot, but if you've been somebody that's, you know, been into photography with Canon for a while, you might have a lot of investment into it. And
yeah, that's the only thing that they're holding on to at this point, though. Let's be honest. No, that is the, like, I sold off all my, I had $3,000 worth of glass with the Canon. I sold everything to switch over to Sony. One, because I wanted a native lens that was going to be the correct form factor and size for my camera, nice and small, and obviously be quick with the autofocus. And at the time, you can use adapters for Canon, but it wasn't very quick, and the adapter was $3,000 or $300, and it added glare and stuff. But now, Sony, with the A7 R2, is promising that Canon lenses, using this new adapter with this new firmware, which is still a $300 adapter, which a lot of people have been using for the Canon lenses, will be, quote, almost as fast as a native Canon lens on a native Canon body. So now you can have an A7 and get all the same lenses available to you, and the autofocus might be a little bit slower, but it's not like before where it was unusable. You couldn't even use it at all, and if you try to use it, it would take 5 seconds to focus, which is ridiculous. So they're now you can't use Sony lenses on a Canon. Well, to my knowledge.
Why do that, man, Rich?
I mean, Zeiss, Sony Zeiss, and, you know, all these lenses. So now we're taking over your lenses. And you can have your lenses. Canon can make all the lenses they want for us, Sony fanboys. But you guys do not need to make cameras anymore because everybody's selling all their Canon stuff. Dave Dugdale included, me included, many YouTubers included, selling all their Canon stuff off and upgrading to Sony and Panasonic.
Well, yeah, see, that's another thing, too. Since the market is so big for Canon, there's a lot of stuff floating out there. So if you don't want to buy something new, you know, you could buy it used, maybe find something cheaper than what you normally would. And you might be able to afford something a little bit higher end than, you know, you normally would just by buying something used. Even though I will, you know, recognize that there are certain qualities that you can get for cheaper on Sony versus Canon, but it's still an option out there because there's all that stuff looking out there. Like, you get the advantage of having a large, you know, investing in something that has a large market share. I mean, I will say that I think Sony has been dominating the mirrorless camera market. Like,
which is the future. Let's be clear about that. I've already made that clear that that is a future that we talked about that before, about how it's caught up to the point where if you're not using, if you really think that the minuscule advantage you're getting for certain aspects of photography with a mirror lens, mirrorless is just so much more advanced in other things, like being able to see exactly what your picture is going to look like exactly before you take it, rather than going. Seriously, that's like, I didn't use my optical viewfinder on my Canon because I had to use the live view to make sure that I was getting the proper exposure. I know there's professional photographers out there who don't need to, but nobody's perfect. People make a mistake; they didn't get their exposure right, and all of a sudden, that cake has already been cut. That kiss already happened at the wedding, too late. Doesn't matter. Get the EVF, you see exactly what it's going to look like. Boom. Here's another thing. I've touched about this before. And this is a positive and a negative. Mostly a positive, I would say. They're coming out with new models every single year. Within a year and a half span, there's already 5 alpha cameras. They started off with 1 in December of 2013. So just a year and a half ago. Now there's 5. And they all do different things and they all fit different niches. Canon comes out with a 5D Mark II in 2008, and they came out with a 5D Mark III in 2012. And they're probably going to come out with a 5D Mark IV at the end of the year or 2000. It's every 4 years, essentially. So you got to wait 4 years before you get a camera. And you better hope that your timing matches up with that 4-year cycle, or you're going to be behind another 4 years. And yeah, they have a lot of different models, but they're just so, I mean, so does, the Alpha is only one brand. That's the mirrorless full frame brand. There's NEXs, there's the RX100s, there's, you know, the RX10s. They have so many different, they have the A7000s, A9000s, the Alpha, like, so this is an E-mount, they have A-mounts, like, which have a ton of lenses. Like, there's a lot of options, And not even most of those aren't even mirrorless. Like, these are the mirrorless full frames. These ones are the special new ones. But there's a lot of options, just like Canon has, except they're updating them every single year.
Okay. And, yeah, I can see how that can be nice, but still at the same time, too, if they keep coming out with new iterations of stuff like that so often, you're kind of going to feel pressure to...
It's the same thing with phones. Same thing with computers.
But not with Canon. Because they only come out with it every, like, 4 years, like, but you said, right?
You cannot spin that. You cannot spin that to be a good thing. I'm sorry. No, you're not winning that argument.
No, but, okay, like, if the camera's out for a while, it's just one product. Like, they have time to develop accessories.
If I showed you the specs of some of these new cameras coming out compared to the 5D Mark III, which came out 3 years ago, you would throw up in your mouth. You'd be like, literally, a camera, I think the A6000 or A7000 came out the exact same time as the 5D Mark III. Mm-hmm. And I remember I compared the two on the show, and I said, man, the 5D Mark III doesn't even have 60 frames per second, you know, full HD. And, like, the Sony one did. And then now every camera has that. And if you're a Canon fanboy, you're still stuck without slow motion in full HD. They have slow motion in 4K now. Like, I mean, you're way behind if you're waiting for that 5D Mark IV, and that's going to be your next camera. You know, yeah. And in the industry where people are buying a camera every 2 years and kind of like maybe owning two or three cameras at a time and kind of cycling through those. And then when one gets 6 years old or later, they're moving up to a new one. It's nice to be able to have options every year of different brands or different models, different niches and everything.
Yeah. So I will say that's definitely pretty true and very nice for, like, video and stuff, because video is very reliant.
We're not even going to talk about video. I already told you it's going to win.
Yeah, I know exactly. Well, how you're referencing, like, the 60 FPS and the slow motion and all kind of stuff, right? But when you're taking a picture and stuff, depending on what you're doing with the picture, you don't necessarily need, like, all the crazy bells and whistles and all the megapixels and all kind of stuff, right? Like,
well, really? Because Canon seems to think they do, because they're coming out with the 5DS. You know, for what? $4,000, $3,800? And it's basically got, what, 6 more megapixels than the A7 R2, and then the A7 R2 has a list of, like, video features and, like, other crazy super fast autofocus and all these crazy things. And Canon's like, oh, well, we got 50 megapixels.
Okay. Come on. Okay, but the point being was that, okay, for, like, you don't have to buy the camera because you don't need the megapixels if you don't want it, whatever. But, like, you were comparing the cameras based purely on the specs, but you don't necessarily need the best tool to make a good picture.
This, like, is a weird argument now. We're talking about hardware versus hardware, and you're saying, well, so my hardware's a little worse. You don't technically need the best hardware.
Yes, exactly. No, it's an arms race. It's an arms race when it keeps updating so frequently, like... You know, like...
They're like Panasonic. Okay, this is my mic drop moment. Okay. This argument, this honestly was not fair for you. This should have been, but you own a Canon camera, so I made it Canon versus Sony, and everybody knows I hate Canon at this point. This argument, this comparison, would have been so much more fair if you were playing for Panasonic and I was playing for Sony. I stuck you with the loser, stepchild, old granny, whatever. And Panasonic, honestly, is the more fair comparison, which is pretty sad, considering they're the lowest end on the spectrum. Canon can't even touch them, and they're just overpriced. And yeah, they have this assortment of lenses, but all these cameras, especially my full-frame camera, can use all these lenses, using them all to their full potential. Autofocus is nearly there for the A7 R2 in terms of speed. I personally like the Sony lenses. I've owned Canon. I've owned the Sony ones, especially the Zeiss ones. I like the Sony ones better. So if they're smaller, I like that I can carry my camera around. Like I said, one of my coworkers had his Canon 60D today. I could not believe how huge that, like, this one is small compared to his. And his was the same size as my 5D Mark II. And I just totally forgot that that's how big it was, and that I was like, no wonder I didn't take photography. No wonder I only use this for video, because I just didn't want to lug this thing around with me. It's so freaking heavy. How often do you use this? Like, if you had something like this, wouldn't you bring it with you more places? I mean, this is probably an unfair comparison since it's a pocket camera, but I mean, you've seen my camera. It's much smaller than this, much lighter. Just mirrorless is the future, and anybody resisting it at this point, it's kind of like my feeling with electric cars, but we don't need to go into that.
Or like film versus digital?
Oh, you could. Every professor in film school was just like, if you don't shoot on film, you're not an artist. And it's like, really? We're not even going to talk. We should talk about that. Let's write that down for a topic one day. You'll argue for film and argue for digital, or vice versa, and see who can win that argument. Because, man, there's some stupid arguments for film. You wouldn't believe it. Well, it makes it look... I'm not even ruining it. It makes it look worse, so it's more artistic and gritty. Yeah, okay. Anyways, so I think I won.
Wait. That was your mic drop, that it was smaller and more convenient?
No, that literally I should be fighting Panasonic, which is the lowest, cheapest brand. Like, you know, Sony and Canon are comparable in terms of price.
Yeah.
I mean, geez. What? It's not even a fair comparison.
Is it Panasonic?
Yes.
What exactly do they
they're
have
mirror,
on
they're
top
mirrorless.
Of? Ah, okay.
So my whole thing is like, why are we still using mirrors? Like, literally some people feel that they can focus better with optical viewfinders. Mostly because they've been doing it for 30 years. Because I can tell you from personal experience and from things I've read on the internet from other people that this is simply not true. That the optical viewfinder can be off sometimes. It you're seeing through the lens. It's not necessarily what the sensor is going to see at the end of the day. And obviously that goes with exposure too. You have to take your shot and say, oh, you know what, that white balance was off, or, you know, I could fix that in post since I shot in RAW, but I can't fix the exposure, it's too dark, you know, whatever, and they've already cut the cake at this point. Honestly, I've done wedding photography. If you miss things like that, it's just so much easier to be looking at the shot that you're going to be taking. So, that was my point, that I should be fighting Panasonic, because honestly, it's true, which is sad, because Panasonic is half the price of Canon.
Yeah.
So... the fact that that would be a more fair fight, that Sony would still win, in my opinion. But, you know.
Dude, God. But you have the snob factor of this. Who cares if it's bigger? It's bigger, it looks cooler.
I have written on here, every videographer is literally running away from Canon. Like, that takes a lot. You know, I invested, you know, 3 years in Canon and bought all those lenses. And, like, you know, at some point during that, I didn't even have a job. And I was doing little side gigs to fund money to buy lenses. And I literally took all that and I was like, you know what? I don't care if I lose two-thirds of my money. I'd rather just get the camera and one lens. Get the Sony camera and one lens for these four or five lenses in the camera. I was willing to do that, to just run away from them. And that's how passionate I felt about the Sony. And then I was amazed at what I got. So much so that I now own 5 lenses.
Wow.
So more than I ever owned with the Canon, and way better quality lenses.
So what initially made you make the switch? Like, did you just like read the specs and you're like...
They announced the A7S. And I heard it was mirrorless. Like, I had heard about this mirrorless before. Mirrorless has been around for a couple of years, but it was really far behind before. Because it takes a lot of power to be able to look through the sensor, essentially, while it's processing live without getting any latency or lag. And that's another thing that they've been working on. Obviously, the latency is getting lower and lower with each model. Mm-hmm. Mine, I don't even notice it, but, you know, I'm sure there's some if you go pixel for pixel. But so that technology just wasn't there before. And now all of a sudden they released the Alpha line, and then it was full frame mirrorless. Like, I couldn't resist. Like, it was just, I was looking to upgrade anyways, and I was hoping Canon was going to come out, and then I saw Dave Dugdale's video, and he asked the Canon guy at NAB, that was right when they announced the A7S, and the Canon guy's like, no, we're not going to be coming out with any cameras adding those features. No firmware. No. And the thing is, before, you could use the argument, like, with things like Magic Lantern and stuff, that there was third-party developers that were saying, okay, Canon's not going to do anything about this because they don't want to undercut their more expensive cameras. We're going to make... you know, we're going to hack your cameras and give you the features that you need and want. And we've used those and we've done episodes on those. And those are cool, but they obviously are faulty and all that stuff. Canon just won't do it. They won't add those features. It's not, obviously, people are doing it. People with less skills and programming and everything are doing the things that they could have added from the beginning, but they won't. And they won't simply because of the RDX 100. The DX, 1DX. Which is the $12,000, I don't know how much it costs now, but, you know, very, way overpriced DSLR. When, who did that? Whose decision was it, like, oh man, the DSLRs are really popular right now, maybe we should come out with a camera that's 8 times as expensive and see if people will buy it. Who's it? Like, who? I've never even seen one. I've never seen anybody use one. Like, if you're paying that much, like I said, you might as well get a red camera or like a very professional, like Sony, like FS7 or, you know, Canon C300. Like, those are $20,000 cameras. Might as well get one of those. If you're buying that camera, you're not buying it for photography. You're buying that for video. So go all out and get a video camera. Don't get a DSLR, because you're using a camera like this. You're sacrificing like usability for image quality. That's always been the sacrifice. Like, you can get really good image quality, but you're gonna have to buy a bunch of rig around it and everything. It's gonna be very small. It's not gonna be perfect. There's gonna be rolling shutter. There's all of these different, you know, small batteries and everything. Mm-hmm. Things that professional cameras compensate for. You're willing to sacrifice that for the image quality. So we got a little bit off topic, but that was my biggest thing, is they literally shot themselves in the foot, and now they're going to lose the market share on all videographers for that, you know, $10,000 to $5,000 price range. And that's a pretty big market share, maybe 90%, you know. Everybody and their mom has a DSLR nowadays. Yeah. Think about it. I mean, you're not even an avid photographer and you have one. When's the last time you used that?
A while ago.
A gentleman arguing for Canon who doesn't even support his own brand. I use mine today in Balboa Park. I use mine every single day. Come on.
I carried it with me. I used it today.
Oh my gosh. All right, well, that's it for this week. Please go to iTunes, download, rate, comment, and subscribe. We have no ratings right now.
None?
Didn't you ask your mom to leave us a rating? A review?
No.
I asked her.
I knew you were leading into something like that. Come on.
Okay, yeah. So, and then look forward to next month. Yeah, next Monday, I will be doing a new features for Adobe and talking about that. That's it for this week. It's getting hot in here.
So hot.
Bye.